Catch all the Caps playoff games at Walter's Sports Bar and Navy Yard, across from Nationals Park. Plenty of TVs for you and your friends to watch Ovechkin and crew take on the Rangers.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now the pitch, swinging a ground ball toward the middle, on through into center field, a base hit. Alves around third will come home. Around second is Bregman. Will go to third. Kyle Tucker has done it again. It's a single, his second RBI of the game, and the Astros tack on here in the eighth inning. Adding to their lead, it's now Houston 4 and Washington 2. Now the pitch. Swinging a line drive up the middle. It's a base hit into center field. Senzel scores from third. Abrams around third coming home. The throw will go to second base. It's a game-tying two-run single for Jesse Winker, driving in his seventh and eighth runs of the year. And we are all even now here at the bottom of the ninth. It's the Nationals 4, the Astros 4, 34,608. Cheer for Jesse Winker and the Nationals.
Winning run at second, Nunez. We get set for the bottom of the 10th, tied at 4. Meneses digs in. The outfield is shortened up for Houston. Martinez fires. Meneses hits one toward the gap. Deep right center field. Way back it goes. It's over Dubon. One hop to the fence. Nunez rounding third. He's going to score. The Nationals win. 5-4. They're mobbing Meneses behind the pitcher's mound. Shades of 2019 rallies here in 2024.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Sunday, April 21st, 2024. Along with MassinSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, who is at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi Podcast. On this weekend, during which the Nats are celebrating the five-year anniversary of their 2019 World Series championship team, the 2024 Nats on Saturday channeled their inner 2019 Nats, a 5-4, 10-inning win over the Houston Astros at Nationals Park in Game 2 of a three-game series. Now, the Nats blew a 2-1 seventh-inning lead, so you think about it, like the 2019 team, some shoddy bullpen work, but the Nats then overcame a 4-2 ninth inning deficit. So, like the 2019 team, coming up big when doing so mattered most. The Nats for this regular season now are 9-11. So many heroes for the Nats on Saturday. There was Trevor Williams, who had yet another impressive outing, one run in six innings. There was C.J. Abrams, who had two more extra base hits, including another homer. There was Jesse Winker, who in the bottom of the ninth had a game-tying two-run single to center field on an 0-2 pitch to tie the game at 4. There was Lane Thomas, who, yes, went 0 for 5, but who in the top of the 10th had a massive outfield assist to preserve a 4-all tie. And there was Joey Meneses, who had been struggling big time, but who went 3 for 5 with a walk-off RBI single and two other singles. Official attendance at Nationals Park was 34,608. Mark, all things considered, I do believe that we just witnessed the Nats' best win so far this season.
I tend to agree with that one now. I'm not sure there's a whole lot else that could compete with this one, at least so far, 20 games in. And I got to tell you, I had the same feeling as I watched that play out with those guys in attendance watching from the suite. Boy, this sure felt like a 2019 win. And like you said, not just that they won, not just that they rallied late, but it was the fact that the bullpen actually forced them to rally late and come through like that, but they did. They did so getting contributions from a bunch of players. As you said, it wasn't a big blast that did it for them. They were good clutch hits at a time when they desperately needed them because they could not buy a clutch hit for the majority of the afternoon. And then in the end, they actually did something that the 2019 Nationals never did. They beat the Astros in DC. So how about that?
Before we drill deeper on these many heroes, paint us a picture, if you would, of the atmosphere, the environment at Nationals Park on Saturday. This really was the meat of the celebration this weekend, Saturday. Like I said, the attendance was pretty strong, 34,000 plus. The crowd was loud, certainly came across that way on television. What did you make of what went down?
Yeah, it was a good environment all around. This felt like the biggest day of the weekend. We'll see what Sunday brings, but I think this one probably is going to be the bigger one of them all. You had, I think, a dozen players in total from that team that were back. They all were out there before the game. We interviewed a bunch of them. They did Q&As with fans who had arrived early. They showed video messages of a lot of the other guys who were not here. So you had Max Scherzer, Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, Daniel Hudson. A bunch of others had sent in video messages. None from Steven Strasburg, just for the record. I know everyone was wondering about that. And it made for a very celebratory kind of day overall. And it was a good event. I think, I know we talked about coming into this, like when you only have half the team there and it's only been 5 years, like, is this really worth it? It was worth it for everyone who was there today, for the biggest reason being that it was a chance for those players and for these fans to do this together, something they were not able to do, as we've talked about, in 2020. And so while there could be an even bigger celebration, say 5 years from now, when the vast majority of that team could come back for a reunion, this still felt like a big deal to a lot of them. And I think to the fans did as well. And then for the outcome to be what it was in the end, that really was the cherry on top and made for a really special day at the park.
That was very cool. The weather was perfect too. So a lot of things broke right on this Saturday. So very happy for the Nationals and am happiest for Nationals fans. You guys deserve that. And yeah, for the record, Steven Strasburg was not there. There was not a surprise appearance, and there wasn't even a video message. So in terms of these many heroes, Joey Meneses, I'm so happy for him. He has really been struggling. And Tim and I, in the last installment of the podcast, talked about the possibility of him maybe being optioned back to the minors, just with how bad he has been. Meneses came into this game with an OPS plus for this regular season of 39. 100 is league average. An OPS plus of 39 is putrid. Meneses was back in the lineup on Saturday. I am sure there were more than a few Nats fans whose eyes were a-rolling when they saw Meneses, not just in the lineup, but as a starting designated hitter, starting DH and number six batter. But Meneses in this game, 3 for 5. Now, all three hits were singles. He's still not hitting for any kind of power, but one of the singles, the walk-off RBI single, bottom of the 10th, a walk-off leadoff first pitch RBI single off the right center field warning track for a 5-4 Nats win. So, you know, he didn't get an extra base hit, but that was extra base kind of power that Meneses demonstrated there. The other two singles, bottom of the 2nd, one out first pitch, opposite field single to right field, and Meneses in the Nats, 1 run 4th, a single to left field. It is often said in baseball when a slumping player gets a hit, boy, he needed that. This is like the epitome of a guy needing a big hit, needing a good day. Meneses on Saturday had a good day.
Yeah, it's not just that he had a hit. It was that he had the hit in the situation that he had made a name for himself here the last couple of years. And he had not done that at all this year. He came into that at bat 2 for 12 with runners in scoring position this season. He's been a big part of the problem for a team that has really struggled in those spots. And look, let's be honest, the two previous at bats, before the 10th, he comes up with runners in scoring position in both the 6th and the 8th. In the 6th inning, after a leadoff double, he hits the first pitch ground back to the mound for an out. In the 8th inning, with runners on 1st and 2nd, nobody out, he strikes out and did not look good on those swings, I gotta say. So you now get to the 10th and he's the first batter. You have the automatic runner on 2nd. And I'm sure it would be easy in his mind to now feel the weight of the moment, say, oh boy, here we go again. I've got to come through here. I thought it was interesting. He told us afterwards that he actually feels more relaxed in that kind of situation, that whatever troubles he's had, he kind of puts behind him and he says, okay, this is a spot I've done well in before. And the pressure is on the pitcher, quite frankly. If he makes a bad pitch, the game's over and we're going to win the game. And so I think that actually, in a weird way, helped him knowing that, hey, this is it. Nobody out, winning run on second, pitcher's in trouble. It's up to me to come through with this. And I think that did end up being a good situation for him to be in. And he drove that ball. You said, you know, officially a single. That was a double for anybody who watched it. He just didn't make it to second base before the mob reached him. So it counts as a single officially. Now, does this mean that he's out of it altogether? No, we don't know what's going to happen next. There's still pressure on him to get this thing back. There is still going to be growing pressure if his slump continues through the rest of the month. There will be pressure on him to figure it out or potentially risk being sent to the minors. But you could sort of see the relief in his eyes after this one. This was a big moment for him, a big moment for the team, and yeah, they all needed it a lot.
Meneses had a third of the Nats' hits in this game. The Nats wore the game 9 hits and 5 walks, but 2 for 13 with runners in scoring position. The Nats were putting guys on base, just were not coming through in run scoring opportunities, but 2 hits with runners in scoring position, the Meneses walk-off single, and the Jesse Winker game-tying single. Boy, Jesse Winker continues to come through. He in this game on Saturday, starting left fielder, number 2 batter, 1 for 4, but the one was a game-tying 2-run single. Andy drew a walk, but Winker in an Nats 2-run ninth, game-tying 2-run single to center field on an 0-2 pitch to tie the game at 4. This was quite the rally by the Nats in that inning. And, you know, in watching this game, this did feel like one of these games in which it was, okay, they're not coming through with runners in scoring position, but they do keep putting guys on base. The Astros bullpen was not overwhelming in this game. You felt like at some point there should be some sort of bust out. And sure enough, there was. And just in the nick of time.
They pushed it as far as they could without doing that. And they did against a good pitcher, Ryan Presley. I know he's not technically their closer now, right, with Josh Hader there, but, you know, a guy with significant closing experience for them, kind of a double closer situation. So it starts with, well, it actually starts with Nick Senzel reaching on catcher's interference. So good for him. But C.J. Abrams drives one deep to right, almost looked like it was going to be a home run. It wasn't. And now you have Winker coming up knowing that at minimum, he's just got to get one run in and get Abrams to third with less than 2 outs. And ideally, you get it through the infield and you could score both. And so like Meneses, he kind of had a relaxed approach in that spot. Pressure's on Presley, not on me. He gets behind 0-2, yes. And he said his mindset was infield's playing back, get the bat on the ball, hit it up the middle. And worst case, the runner's going to score. The trailing runner's going to advance to third. As it turns out, he hit it in the exact right spot, got it through, and the game is tied. And boy, has Jesse Winker been a godsend for this team. I can't imagine any of us saw that one coming out of spring training, but he has been fantastic for them. And you can see that he really appreciates this opportunity he's been given. After a couple of bad years, he didn't know what was going to be for him, what his future was. He feels like he's really a part of this team now, and he is very much appreciative of them for giving him this opportunity.
There are 4 Nats who are hitting: C.J. Abrams, Jesse Winker, Riley Adams, and Luis Garcia Jr. Like, those are the big 4 in terms of the offense, and Winker has been tremendous. His OPS for this regular season now up to 987. But with C.J. Abrams, I mean, man, this is almost frightening what this guy is doing. He is playing like an MVP candidate in terms of the offensive production. 2 more extra base hits in this game. 2 first pitch extra base hits in this game. Abrams, as the Nats starting shortstop and number 1 batter, so he was back to that leadoff spot, 2 for 5 with a solo homer and a double. He did commit a miscatch error, but whatever. Abrams coming through with another home run. He, in the bottom of the first inning, what ended up being a 1-run Nats first, hit a first pitch leadoff homer to right field to tie the game at 1, 405 feet per Statcast. And Abrams in that Nats 2-run ninth, the aforementioned double, a first pitch double off the right center field wall. C.J. Abrams now in this regular season on first pitches, 8 for 15, 2 home runs, a triple, and 3 doubles, an OPS of 1,800. There is almost always value in working counts. There's no doubt about that. But we talked about this recently, right? There are some circumstances, there are some players for whom the first pitch is the best pitch. And man, this guy is killing opposing pitching on first pitches.
You know, when you are a leadoff hitter, especially in the first inning, 99% of the time, you're going to get a fastball over the plate right away. We saw Kyle Schwarber do this in the past. He still does it with the Phillies. There's nothing wrong with taking an aggressive approach if you get the right pitch. And yeah, the first pitch of the game, it was down the pipe, fastball, and he did that. And what he's going to now force other teams to do is have to rethink that strategy. And all of a sudden, you're going to have game-opening curveballs and sliders and changeups to try to throw him off, knowing that he's looking to ambush a fastball. So good on him for seizing those moments and making the most of them. The double, as I said, almost was another home run himself. I believe 9 of his last 10 hits now are for extra bases. And so he actually hasn't had any stolen base attempts in a long time because he's never on first base. He's always on second or rounding the bases altogether. I think they'll take that trade-off. He has been nothing short of remarkable here. We saw it late last year. You had a sense of this. He is coming into his own right now. And it's such a joy to watch a young player who you know has the potential to realize it. And now for the rest of the baseball world to start to recognize it, it's going to be fun to see how that goes.
He, for right now, is the player who the Nats can least afford to lose to injury because he makes that offense go. You know, he is, as Reggie Jackson said of himself many years ago, right, the straw that stirs the drink. And to that point about the extra base hit, so his slugging percentage for the regular season now is at 700, 21 hits, 6 homers, 3 triples, 4 doubles. 13 of his 21 hits are extra base hits. I mean, you cannot say enough about what he's doing, especially from a standpoint of hitting for power.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Here's your James Wood update for the game played on Saturday as Rochester lost 9-5 to the Toledo Mudhens. Wood hit second, played center field, 1-for-5 in the game, struck out twice. He's hitting .313 on the season with an OPS of .918. And by the way, Trey Lipscomb played second base, 1-for-5. He's hitting .250 so far in limited time in AAA. Now back to the show.
And the 0-1, swinging a fly ball, popped up shallow right. Thomas with a great arm moving into foul ground. He'll make the catch. Altuve's coming home. Thomas's throw on one up. Adams tags him out. It's a double play. Thomas guns him down, and the inning is over. A one-hop strike from Lane Thomas on the foul fly in right. Altuve is gunned down. Adams applies the tag with room to spare.
And then there was the Lane Thomas outfield assist. So we fast forward to the top of the 10th inning. Kyle Finnegan faces two batters and gets 3 outs on just 7 pitches. Had this game gone to the 11th, I'm presuming that Finnegan would have pitched that 11th because he barely pitched in the 10th. But Finnegan in this inning induced a 1-out fly ball by the Astros' number 3 batter, Alex Bregman, in right field foul territory where the ball was caught by Lane Thomas. And he then unleashed a terrific throw to throw out Jose Altuve on a tag of play at home plate. You earlier in talking, Joey Meneses said that, you know, one game does not a slump end. And that is true. Lane Thomas recently had some good games. He still overall is not producing offensively. He did not have a good game once again on Saturday, offensively speaking, 0-for-5. But boy, was that outfield assist big.
It was huge. He almost had one the previous inning on the fly ball to right. He made a perfect throw to third and almost got Chaz McCormick. Would have been a remarkable play itself. Now, you get to the 10th, and I don't know what you were thinking. As I'm watching this live, I turned to my colleague Bobby Blanco right next to me. I said, let it drop, because it's going to be a foul ball. And often in that kind of situation, if the game's on the line, and the runner's on third, and you get a foul ball, sometimes an outfielder will purposely let it fall down, thinking that the odds of you throwing out the runner are not that great. Lane said he honestly didn't think too much about that, because in that position there, he's kind of coming in on it. There's not a whole lot of foul ground there to begin with. He knows his arm. He trusts his arm. And he was hoping Altuve would maybe get a bad jump on it. And boy, was that, I mean, if you could draw up the perfect throw to the plate, that was it. Everything about it is exactly how you would ever want to have that done. And it provides such an energy boost to everybody, the team, the ballpark, everybody. At a moment when you think, oh, after this rally, we're now about to be down and have to try to rally again in the bottom of the 10th. And instead, no, they get out of that jam. And now one hit's going to win the game for the home team. I can't overstate just how big a play that was. And I don't know how many others could have pulled it off or would have tried to pull it off. I asked Joey Meneses, who has played some right field, not his strong suit, but he has played it, you know, what would you do in that spot? He said, I'd let it drop. I don't have Lane's arm. And he's right. And I think there's other guys who might have had the same approach.
It was an awesome moment. The crowd erupted and it set up the stage perfectly for the Nats to walk off the Astros in that bottom of the 10th inning. Like, that was one of those things that perfectly transitioned top of the inning to bottom of the inning where the Nats won the game in walk-off fashion. Well, all of these heroes, and we haven't yet even gotten to Trevor Williams. And how about the season that our guy Trevor is putting together for your 2024 Washington Nationals? We've talked about this. He, last season, before his season imploded, was actually pretty good. But the thing is, he so far this season isn't just like pretty good. He has been, dare I say, very good. Trevor Williams now, four starts into this regular season, has an ERA of 2.91 and a whip of 0.97. Statistically speaking, he has been the Nats' best starting pitcher, and there actually isn't that much of a debate in that regard. Williams in this game on Saturday against an Astros team that we know can hit. I know the Astros are not off to a very good start. That is true. But this is still an Astros lineup that's pretty formidable. Williams in this game, one run, six innings. He gave up just three hits, all of which were singles. He issued no walks. I mean, who is this guy? He recorded four strikeouts. He threw a ton of strikes, 77 pitches, 52 strikes. A mere 25 balls, a strikes to balls ratio of better than 2-1. Now, Davey did the thing that you should do with Trevor. Six innings, 77 pitches, get him the heck out of there before things fall apart. Bullpen did not necessarily hold up its end of the bargain, but just honing in on Williams, another really good outing for this guy.
He retired the last 13 batters he faced. And the efficiency that he did that with, I thought, was remarkable, especially against that lineup, who we know can work counts and put together good quality at bats. So, I mean, all the credit in the world to him. This isn't the Oakland A's that he did this to, like he did on Sunday. These are the Houston Astros. Big difference. And yet, you get to that point, and it just felt like, boy, we know what's going to happen now. He's through the sixth. He's at 77 pitches. Retired 13 in a row. Like, why not let him go? Except, you know, this is the philosophy. Davey has made it clear how he wants to approach this. And now you're just going to trust your bullpen. And the bullpen did not do its part. The lefty in particular, Robert Garcia, could not retire any of the three batters. And next thing you know, Trevor Williams' start looks like it was going to be wasted. Now, I asked Davey afterward, to, you know, knowing what your strategy is with him, do you consider pushing that, knowing that it hasn't worked out the last two times, that the bullpen has not done the job? Would you actually consider changing your approach to this if Trevor's pitching that well? And he kind of smiled and he laughed and he said, not yet. He said, we still have to remember he wore down last year as the season went on. He feels like he's been really fresh every 5 days right now because he's only throwing 80 or so pitches, maybe allowing him to sustain some success start to start. He said maybe you get to a point later this summer if he's keeping this up. The weather's warm. Maybe there are times when the bullpen's a little more worn down. You say, okay, go give us that one more inning. But they're not there yet. I know fans don't love this. If they had lost this game 4-2, this is going to be the story of the game no matter what. I think it's something to watch, but it is what the plan is with somebody like Trevor Williams in particular. And, you know, the background does suggest, you know, we're all saying, oh, why not let him go? Well, do we think he would have retired Alvarez, Bregman, and Tucker in the seventh? Odds are he probably wouldn't have. So you get him out while the going's good. And at some point, you have to trust your bullpen to actually get the job done.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I have zero problem with Davey handling Trevor Williams in this way. I think this is the right way to handle him. I think the job of a manager is always to get the starting pitcher out before he starts struggling. You don't wait until he starts struggling. And so if that means that, you know, occasionally you take a guy out a bit too soon, I'd rather that than you routinely are taking him out too late, especially Trevor Williams. He's not your ace. Like, there's a body of work that tells you what he is, which is actually a pretty solid pitcher when handled properly. He has had some good seasons. He had a good season with the New York Mets in 2022. But, you know, you mentioned later this summer, and we've talked about Trevor Williams as, you know, maybe possibly being a trade chip, right? He's in a contract season. This is the second year of a two-year $13 million contract that he signed with the Nats in December of 2022. Given the way that he fell off a cliff last season, to me, if you're gonna sell, you sell high, and you maybe sell soon. And I don't anticipate the Nats doing that because they almost never do that, right? They wait until trade deadlines to trade people, if that. I mean, you know, we've seen it sometimes guys not even get traded. But if you're Mike Rizzo and you're thinking bigger picture here, right? And Trevor Williams, I mean, he's not part of your bigger picture plan. I wonder if this is the kind of thing where maybe you pull the trigger on a trade, say in June. You know, do you think Rizzo would entertain doing that? To me, he should. I don't expect him to, but do you think he would entertain doing that, given that with Williams, I mean, there's no telling how long this is going to go for.
Yeah, so I would say June is the earliest that you even have that kind of conversation. And it's not just on the Nat side of the equation. You know, you have to have other teams willing to make those kind of moves earlier than they normally would. Most teams aren't really thinking in terms of trading for veterans until you get closer to the end of July. But you find the right match for it. If he is going well, sure, you try to see what you can get for him at that point. Maybe it coincides well with Cade Cavalli's debut, and that would be an obvious, you know, replacement for him. We'll see what else happens rotation-wise. You just hope he can keep it up because it's good for the team, first of all, and it's good for him in his long run. And then maybe ultimately there is some value that you can get from it. Even in a worst-case scenario, if you get to a point that you can bump him to the bullpen, he can be effective for you from out of there. I mean, on that road trip, I kept thinking to myself, we're seeing every team has somebody they can turn to give him like three scoreless innings out of the bullpen and keep a game manageable and not wear other guys out. The Nats don't have that person. Now, right now, Trevor Williams should be starting. But even if he's having some success or drops off some and you have somebody else who could take over, there's value in having someone like that be that three-inning reliever. So when Mackenzie Gore gets knocked out in the fourth, you can go to somebody else who can still keep the game close and not burn up a bunch of relievers.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here's C.J. Abrams. Drills the first pitch to deep right field. Way back. Going. Gone. Goodbye. The first pitch from Ronald Blanco is a laser beam over the 14 and a half-foot wall in right center field. C.J. Abrams with his fourth career game leadoff home run and his team-leading sixth of the year, RBI number 12. And it's the Nationals 1 and the Astros 1.
With the Nats bullpen in this game, we talked about Finnegan, ultimately five Nats relievers. Yes, this was another game in which Davey had to use five relievers combined to allow three runs in four innings. So Robert Garcia got charged with two runs without recording it out. He would end up being a two-run seventh for the Astros, faced three batters, got no outs. He faced the meat of the Astros lineup. The numbers 2, 3, and 4 batters gave up a leadoff full count single by Yordan Alvarez to right field, issued a full count walk of Alex Bregman, and then gave up an opposite field RBI single by Kyle Tucker to left field to tie the game at 2. Hunter Harvey in that Astros 2-run 7th faced 4 batters, got 3 outs, but he gave up a 1-out RBI single by Jeremy Pena to left field for a 3-2 Astros lead. Jordan Weems allowed a run in the top of the 8th on 2 singles and a walk. That was disappointing. Tanner Rainey, though, he tossed a scoreless top of the 9th a day after tossing a perfect top of the 9th. So maybe possibly Rainey is starting to round into form. And that actually proved to be an important scoreless top of the 9th inning. And then we had what we had with Kyle Finnegan. So, you know, Davey these days, even when he gets a good outing from a starting pitcher, inevitably ends up using like 3 to 5 relievers, it feels like. The Nats do have an off day on Monday, but that's going to be their last off day for about 2 weeks. So, you know, you have some wiggle room with the bullpen this weekend, but then after that, things could tighten up a bit.
Yeah, it's why eventually you do have to try to push your starters a little bit more. But, you know, the conversation might be different, too, if Robert Garcia comes in and actually retires the left-handed batters that he's supposed to face. Now, I do wonder how much is Garcia getting worn down here early on. They go to him a lot. He's the only lefty in their bullpen. That may be a move they have to consider making here at some point, having somebody else to help him out in that regard. You can't always go to the same guy when you've got to face big left-handed hitters. I know he's had some success, but he's not proven over the long haul. And I don't know what the state of his arm is going to be over time when he's pitching at this rate. So I think that's something else to watch. And boy, he's going to Hunter Harvey early at times to get out of jams, like in the 7th inning. In this case, Harvey didn't have to come back for the 8th, but he's pitching a lot as well. And I think it underscores the need for more than just the A bullpen at the back end to show they can be trusted in spots. We thought coming into the season that they were better positioned to do that. It hasn't quite played out that way so far. But at some point, you do have to trust some others, I think, to get outs in those kind of spots because you cannot wear down your top guys all the time.
No, I mean, we're not even a month into the season. There is a long way to go with that bullpen. So the Nats can win this series here. Game 3, Sunday afternoon, 1:35. Mitchell Parker will be the Nationals starting pitcher. We are providing shout-outs on the Nats Chat podcast this season. If you want to send a happy birthday or a get well soon or a well wish or a congratulations or whatever to someone who you care about, email Tim Shovers. That email address is natschatpodcast@gmail.com. From Linda and Brent Stone, thank you all for making our California spring trip so memorable, as this is the second shout out that the Stones have purchased this season. We appreciate that very much. Continues the shout out from Linda and Brent Stone. Taking the series at San Francisco and Los Angeles, but also unique things such as our surprise meeting of Yoan Adon at the San Francisco baggage carousel, seeing 3 outs on 2 pitches in Oakland, breaking the glass, as in Dodgers starting pitcher Tyler Glass now, plus Mitchell Parker's MLB pitching debut win, being in Dodger Stadium on Jackie Robinson Day, Abrams leadoff homers, the wonderful Winker, Luis Garcia Jr.'s 3-run homer, great base stealing, and so many excellent defensive plays, all of this accompanied by the fascinating chess game maneuvering of the franchise players and the final coup, Davey's 400th win. N-A-T-S, Nats, Nats, Nats. Thank you for that, Linda and Brent. You know, the way that Linda and Brent framed that, that was a pretty nice road trip out in California for the Nats. And the highlight, at least for the Stones, had to have been the Yoan Adon encounter at the San Francisco baggage carousel. That is a high point.
Well, they should have broken that story. They could have been ahead of all of us and known that he was there. So what's going on, guys? Going through all that, it kind of, you don't really think about it in the moment. Like, that was an eventful road trip. A lot of stuff happened, a lot of good stuff, some not as good stuff, but that was a good one for them to pick. And I will say, and I've noticed this for years, the Nats draw well on the West Coast. There's always a good sampling of fans in San Francisco and LA and San Diego. And in Oakland, it was a lot easier to hear them because there weren't as many fans there to begin with. Whether you live out there already or if you're from the area and never been to any of those West Coast parks, make the effort if you can. Do those trips. Dodger Stadium is great. Petco Park is great. AT&T Park in San Francisco is fantastic. It's a fun environment and a good place to see your guys play on the road.
Hit us up on X at Nats_chat. Email the show natschatpodcast@gmail.com, including if you would like to sponsor the podcast and you can sponsor a specific game or a specific series. All kinds of ways that the Nats Chat Podcast can be put to work for you. Hit up Tim Shovers again, natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You could find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is at Nats Chat Podcast. And check out our website, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. Nats Chat is on the radio Sunday morning 9 to 10 on ESPN Richmond, which is 106.1 FM in the Richmond, Virginia area, and on Priority Sports Radio 94.1 in the Virginia Beach area. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
As the Nationals are a strike away from franchise history and some World Series history, as Hudson tries to close it out, it'll be another 3-2 pitch to Michael Brantley. Hudson sets the kick, and here it comes. Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books! The celebration is on! The Washington Nationals are the world champions! Remember where you are, so you remember where you are right now at 11:50 Eastern Time! Remember where you are on October 30th, 2019, when the Washington Nationals finished the fight from the depths of a forgettable 19-31 start. They have climbed to the top of baseball's highest peak, giving us all a finish to a season we will remember for the rest of our lives. The Nationals celebrate just behind the pitcher's mound. A world championship, Curly W, is in the books. The Nationals down 2-0, 6 unanswered runs. They beat the Astros 6-2. They are the world champions of baseball. Unbelievable!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.